everyone, and welcome to the newest edition of the Retro Raw Rundown. Yes, we are a couple of days late, but I hope you will forgive us. I was on the road for 10 days. Sondra was busy feeding the alcoholism of Grand Rapids, Michigan. But we are now here to talk about the October 7th, 1996 Monday Night Raw. Sondra, are you excited to be back in the DeLorean and going back to the wonderful, wacky world of 1996?
I am so excited. I have figured out that 1996 is this glorious place in wrestling where there are sultans and stalkers and Bob Backlund with sunglasses for some reason. And it's basically just the best. So I am pretty dang excited. Whereas last week's episode of Retro Raw Rundown, I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, this wasn't the greatest. No. It was great again. I'm super stoked.
Again, like, so much happens in a 49-minute show.
So much. I kept having to pause to be like, no, I got to note this down. No, this was, oh, this is a weird detail question that I have. And it's, there's just so much packed into every minute. It's crazy. The closest thing to it that I've ever seen is when I, like, old school NXT, when they used to do a bunch of wacky character stuff, right? Like, that's kind of what this is reminding me of. So I am having fun.
It is fun. It is fun. And again, if you've not listened to one of these Retro Raw Rundowns before, the premise is I'm going back and watching old Raws that I've seen as a kid and rewatching them. Sondra is watching them for the first time. So Sondra will have questions. Hopefully I can answer them. Now, I do want to add in, I did ask JR in London about the fake Razor Diesel thing and the storyline with him and Vince, and he said there was never really an endgame plan for it, and he just did what he was told.
Really?
That's the story. Like, he said there was never an endgame that he knew of. Unless he's just not telling me and there was, but, like, that's what he says. He says, you know, he didn't think it was a good idea, whether that be the fake Razor Diesel or just him being in a storyline with Vince McMahon, but that's what he said. So,
did he have anything to say about whether the characters were supposed to, like, take over and actually be Razor and Diesel, or whether that was all supposed to be so disingenuous?
Well, I think the idea behind the Razor and Diesel thing separately was basically like a Vince ego thing, you know? Because he's just like, I own Razor and Diesel, so I can use them. But, like, everybody knew that Razor and Diesel were Hall and Nash, and I think that it probably just reminded, because at this point on Nitro, you've got the NWO that have just started doing this new crazy stuff, realistic television, and then on this side, it's like the parody show. You know, you've got Razor and Diesel, and it's like really bad imitation versions.
Especially
Diesel, but I mean, I love heel JR. I just love it. Like, I don't know why. It makes no sense. There was never going to be a match, but I just kind of like it. I'll never forget. I have no loyalty to the World Wrestling Federation. I've only got loyalty to good old JR. It's just, it'll always make me smile. But let's talk about October 7th. And one of the things that always makes me laugh when we watch these shows is the dramatic intros that they have.
They're so great.
Like, the dramatic theme music as Todd Pettengill explains to us what happened last week and what's going to happen tonight. And, like,
Vader
is
here and his message is clear.
Yeah. Goldust is psychotic, but he's dealing with a man who's already lost his mind.
Yes. And you're like,
so good. So good.
And the scandal that rocked the World Wrestling Federation. Jeff, eat your heart out.
The Jeff Jarrett, Roddy, Jesse James with my baby tonight saga continues and is in no, there's no sign of it slowing down anytime soon.
There is no sign of that song ever leaving my head. Ever.
So, Jerry Lawler and Kevin Kelly intro the show. They are, JR is supposed to be with them, but he's not there yet. What do you think of them? I mean, obviously, JR kind of gets involved, but Lawler and Kevin Kelly as announcers together, what do you make of them and their roles?
They're fine, I guess. I don't think Kevin Kelly's that good at play-by-play, especially because he lets JR and Jerry Lawler just talk over him constantly. I don't think he is strong enough on the announce table to, like, usurp them or whatever. Like, I feel like he kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And Lawler wasn't so bad today. except for when he was talking about Jake Roberts and whatnot. Like, sometimes he tends to interject, but I think they just have such a weird dynamic right now because of the whole heel JR thing, when JR is supposed to constantly, like, insert these weird heel lines. Like, there's one point where we'll get to it, but, like, JR just kind of, like, says something out of the blue about Vince McMahon. They're like, what? What are you even talking about, JR? And he's like, well, just came to my mind. Slash was in my ear.
The thing for Kevin Kelly that's weird is that when he, at this point in time, he was 29 years old.
Was he really?
And he, yeah, and he'd just been hired by the WWF, and then he's put into commentary with these two kind of legends at that point. So it must be tough for him. And
I don't think he's bad. I think I feel bad for him sometimes when JR's like, you know, you're doing play-by-play, the job I should be doing.
And I think that's why I love it so much, because JR's so good at being a dick. Like, yeah. He's so good at it. So Wild Man Mark Meadows out first, fans are receptive to him. Again, it's very weird for me seeing Sable being so grounded and understated. And, like, it's very bizarre to me because I'm so used to her being tits out or, you know, being over the top. It's just very weird to go back to a period before any of that had happened.
I still think she's a lot more likable in this role.
Yeah, of course, because she's playing the secondary character to her husband.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't really serve that much of a purpose other than, you know, to accompany him and be pretty. But it's working. Like, she, like, Sable on the outside being kind of what I assume Miss Elizabeth was to Randy Savage. Am I far off?
No, I think the intent was for that to be the case. I think Miss Elizabeth was far more believable in that role. But yeah, I think that's kind of what they're going for.
That's what they're going for, right? Like, because they have her in sparkly dresses, and she's just kind of out there supporting her husband, and she doesn't really talk, which is probably helping me like her. And, well, because I've heard Sable try to talk, and it doesn't go well, so I much prefer this. But, you know, it's fine. And Wildman Mark Miro is perfectly competent, and he looks like kind of a sweet simpleton, but
Jim Cornette had a great, we were in a conversation, and this really made me laugh, because have you ever seen Johnny B. Badd?
No.
Okay. I feel like I should have probably told you this by now, so people might have been wondering why I hadn't brought this up. So before Mark Meadow came to the WWF, he was in WCW, and he was Johnny B. Badd. And Johnny B. Badd was essentially a ripoff of Little Richard.
Really?
So I'll send you a clip tonight, but Mark Meadow would come out with, like, confetti guns and sparkly tops and was a very flamboyant wrestler.
That sounds amazing.
And Vince McMahon hired him because he loved Johnny B. Badd. But WCW owned Johnny B. Badd, so he couldn't do that. So he comes to the WWF, and then, like, Jim Cornette and I were talking, and he said, you know, one of the problems that people don't realize with Meadow is that nobody knew whether he was black or white. Because, and the thing is, people are going to be like, what? Why does that matter? It's like, unfortunately, in 1996, that stuff was still somewhat prevalent in some parts of America at that point. And the problem was, for three or four years, he was in WCW playing a black guy, essentially.
Do they and have him, like, in blackface and everything?
No, but he's just very, very tanned.
He is, like, very, very tan.
To a point where, like, and so for years, he's playing a knockoff of Little Richard, who is obviously African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's in WWF, and, like, Cornette would say that there would be these meetings where, like, they'd be like, are people clear that he's a Caucasian man? Or do they think he's a black man? Do they not know what he is? And, like, I'd never thought about it before. And then I looked at him and I was like, yeah, I mean, maybe if you saw him as Johnny B. Badd, you were confused. I mean, I always thought he was a white guy. I never really thought he, there was never any point where I was like, oh yeah, Mark Meadows black. Like, I just never thought he was.
He just doesn't look black to me, like, at all. If anything, I would guess Latino, but
Yeah, so that was apparently just a little side thing that I was I found out. But
incredibly interesting.
So Diesel comes out accompanied to the ring, Sondra, by Jim Ross.
That's where he was. He'd been missing, but it was because he was doing some backstage dealings with Big Daddy Cool Diesel.
Kind of Big Daddy Cool Diesel.
It's like what else do you call him, Kenny?
It's the equivalent of going to a shopping mall and paying a $5 thing to meet Santa. Like, it's that kind of thing. This is not Father Christmas, ladies and gentlemen.
Although, he does look exactly like Mick Foley.
This is true. Now, again, I don't know why I've not asked you this before. You know who Diesel is, right?
Yeah, I thought we talked about it.
Okay, just to make sure. So this is basically where Glenn Jacobs' career was about to die, because he comes out as fake Diesel.
It's really bizarre how much he looks like Mick Foley, though, right? Like, have you seen this? Has this ever crossed your mind?
The only reason it's not crossed my mind is because I feel like the dye that he's put on his face and his hair to have black facial hair and black hair is so fake.
I think maybe that's why he looks even more like Mick Foley. Because remember a few weeks back on Raw, when Mick Foley, like, did his beard super black.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I get you now. Okay, I get it. Diesel / Mick faced off against Mero. It was a pretty bog-standard match. Nothing really that exciting in the match. It was all about, again, because I was thinking of, you know, I was watching it, like, the whole thing was about JR being investigated by Vince McMahon on commentary. That was the story. You know, JR's talking about Vince and the...
At some point, he goes, this isn't some sort of outsider deal. If any deal, I don't really want to call it a deal. If anything, this is an insider situation. I'm just trying to create a more competitive environment in the WWF, and the ones who win are the fans. So they made sure to shoehorn in an outsider's reference.
Of course they did. And then during the match, they do one of these, what was very famous in WWF at that point, the inset promo. You mm-hmm. know, half the screen is the match, half the screen is this promo backstage. And this was the first time on camera that Rick Bogner did his Razor Ramon impression. Thoughts?
Didn't he do it on the first episode?
Well, he started to, but he didn't really get into it. You know, he said like two words and then Savio Vega ran out and killed him. Or they fought.
That's right.
But like, this was his first full promo. What did you think of him in terms of his... attempt at trying to be Scott Hall?
Well, I've never really liked at all Scott Hall's attempt at being Scarface, right? Like, I cannot stand Razor Ramon.
How
I just
dare
can't.
You?
It's so frustrating how slowly he speaks.
Come
Why
on to
with
the
all the
show
toothpicks?
And make...
What okay. is your deal? And so here, it seems pretty standard Razor Ramon to me. Big Daddy Cool is doing... All right, Chico, why don't I take a closer look? Like,
see, now that's interesting. That's a you, because I always, here's the thing. Yes, the way that Razor Ramon spoke was incredibly slow, but I think Scott Hall pulled it off to an extent.
I've never liked it. That clip that they always play, the "You want a war? You got it. You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. I can't speak in sentences without pausing every three or two words, Chico."
Now, see, Sondra has just proven my point. Scott Hall can do it well. Sondra cannot. So my whole thing here with Bogner was it felt like pure parody for me. Like, it was almost like, and I mean, I thought it was dog shit when I was watching it at the time, and even more now. Like, when he does that promo, it's just like, it's slightly embarrassing to watch.
Well, it is a parody, basically.
But it's not even a good one. Not even like, I know somebody who can do a William Regal impression that's so good that if I closed my eyes, I would think William Regal was in the room. That's fine. This was a guy trying to be another guy and not quite able to be the other guy.
Yeah.
It didn't float my boat at the time. It doesn't really float my boat now. Are you a fan of fake Razor and Diesel?
Oh, I love them. I absolutely love them because they're so bizarre, right? Like, it's the most bizarre thing in the world.
You mean they're so rubbish?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. As long as it's like one of your, you like them for rubbish and it's not like you think they're legitimately a great thing.
Oh, no, I don't think they're legitimately a great thing. I swear Kane moves better now than Diesel did in 1996. And I'm wondering if it was just a too accurate Kevin Nash impression.
Well, like, there's the famous. See, the thing is, now that you're watching this stuff, you can go back and watch like Jim Cornette's 1997 timeline. You'll get what he's talking about, a lot of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he was talking about was he had to show Glenn Jacobs how to do Diesel. And Diesel only had 5 moves.
So I'm Glenn just picturing Jacobs, Jim Cornette showing Glenn Jacobs how to be Diesel, and it's a really funny image in my head. Go on.
And it's on YouTube, so he's like, he only had 5 fucking moves. He's got the kick, he's got the punch, he's got the powerbomb, he's got the fucking hair flip. So the hair flip is one of the 5 moves.
The hair flip is one of the moves.
And and Cornette's like, I guarantee, find one more move, fuckers, up to that point. I bet you it doesn't exist. and I tried to watch a Diesel match at one point, and he was right. There's no more moves. There's nothing else. So Razor Ramon ends up interfering in the match. Disqualification, and then Mark Mero ends up getting jackknife powerbombed. Sable runs.
Well, Razor interferes because Mark Mero did do a somersault plancha onto Razor Ramon at ringside, because after he went to take a closer look, then he wandered around ringside for a while, and at one point Diesel goes to the outside. Like, Mark Mero gets Diesel to awkwardly flip over the ropes, and then he does a, you know, somersault plancha onto Razor Ramon, and Razor Ramon did not take too kindly to that, apparently.
He didn't. Well, also, what was weird is when Tim White, the referee, called for disqualification, Razor Ramon hadn't actually hit Mark Mero in any way yet.
Well, it's just like in the, was it Razor Ramon Savio Vega, when there was the mm-hmm. disqualification because Diesel pulled the rope down and Savio Vega went over the rope?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. That's the same thing. It wasn't actually a disqualification. It was like a, I mean, a disqualification was going to happen, you know, like it was en route to going there, but that's not what had happened yet, you know?
Yeah, it hadn't happened yet at all. So, I mean, I guess the referees are just really, really on to calling for disqualification in these situations.
They love a good old DQ, but I don't want you to get your hopes up here, Sondra. This is not leading to a long-term Intercontinental Championship feud with Mark Mero and Diesel.
Oh, I had my hopes so high for that because this match was so outstanding.
The Undertaker is digging a grave for Mankind.
Well, Big Daddy Cool did hit the jackknife on...
Yeah, he jackknifed Mero.
He jackknifed Mero and then ran his hands through his hair like a cool motherfucker.
Yeah, that was move number 5.
Yeah, exactly.
Undertaker was digging a grave for Mankind in their grave place that Mankind and Undertaker just cut promos every week.
I'm really waiting for them to run into each other in this cemetery.
I know, because it can't be that big, but it did remind me of how much I used to love when Undertaker had the purple gloves and the black. That was a good look for him, and he's about to get a really shitty look coming up soon, which unfortunately I think you're really going to like, because it tends to be, if I don't like something about Undertaker, you tend to love it, and I think you do it secretly to get at me. So
never.
All I'm going to say is Undertaker might become a bat soon. That's all.
Oh,
I'm
my
saying.
Goodness, is he like a vampire?
We'll see what happens. So
I'm actually pretty excited for this, but this was. The Undertaker digging a grave and going, my work here is nearly at its end.
Who speaks slower, Razor Ramon or Undertaker?
See, I was wondering, actually, I was trying to compare, and I think it's still Undertaker. I think the pauses are longer.
Yeah, I guess it's more believable within the context of the characters that Undertaker would take long to speak, because he's dead.
Yeah, with Razor Ramon, I just wonder if he's having, like, brain damage.
That's possible. Broken it here first. 20 years later, Sondra says what nobody else had the balls to say. So we got the new and improved Rockers coming out, and it's funny how when you put the word new in front of something, it's relatively usually is not very good. And this would be no different. So one of the best tag teams in the history of WWF, the Rockers. Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty, they had amazing tag team matches with the likes of the Brainbusters and the Heart Foundation and all these different teams. And the better part of a decade later, we now have Marty Jannetty teaming up with Leif Cassidy.
It took me until halfway through the match to realize that it was El Snow.
Did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, his hair is in his face a whole lot. And also, I was just so distracted by the mullets. Because my thought process went like this. Like, who are these mulleted men with the neon X's, I wonder? Because I didn't hear that it said new and improved Rockers. Because every time there's a ring announcement, the announcers are talking over it. So I didn't really know that they were the new Rockers even.
You need to be on the ball, Sandra.
Well, it's hard to listen to lots of audio streams at once. Like, there's just so much going on. And also, there was a Psycho Sid promo after the announcement where he said he was the ruler of the world. And
do you know what I loved about Sid's promo is the camera like goes to him, and up until he begins speaking, like the second up until the second he starts speaking, I can see him memorizing his lines.
I know, it's so good, isn't it?
But then he starts talking, and like, I really hope you love Psycho Sid as much as I do, because like, he's so bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, the way he speaks, he's just such a mentalist, and I love him for it, and I loved him at the time for it. Like, he seems genuinely insane.
Yeah, he really does seem genuinely insane. Like, he's so shit, but yeah. And like, and there was also the ad for shirts.
I was hoping you were going to bring this up. So there is an ad for, you know, the man, Shawn Michaels.
The myth.
The Undertaker. And the legend.
Bret Hart. The shirts.
And this is an ad for denim shirts. So let me get this straight. So it's just like rocking the Levi denim color that we all know and love on the front. And on the back, there's just this big fuck off picture of these wrestlers. Yep. Who the fuck would want to walk around in a denim shirt with Shawn Michaels on the back of it? Or The Undertaker? Or Bret Hart?
And who wants to pay $49 plus $7 shipping?
And this is like, this is 1996 $49.
I know. I'm saying, I watched a lot of QVC when I was little, right? And I swear I could get a lovely Diamondique ring for less than this hideous denim shirt. And shipping would not have been as high. Like, what a ripoff. And it is the most 90s thing of all of the 90s things that we've seen on this show, including the In Your House logo.
Were you disappointed that the number is no longer active?
I know, I love that in all the ads, phone number no longer active.
And then we got a vignette of Mr. Perfect building up to his return coming up. And it was a vignette of him wrestling and hitting home runs and hitting strikes and all that sort of stuff. I'm curious, how do you feel about Mr. Perfect at this point? Because you're not very familiar with him. And now you're getting to see the vignettes that... Because they'd aired these type of vignettes back in 1989 when he kind of debuted. So how do you feel about him so far?
Yeah, I feel pretty good about Mr. Perfect. Like, I've seen some of these vignettes before because I've seen some stuff about him. And I've looked up some stuff and I listened to the How To Perfect on How To Wrestling. So I do have some familiarity with him from that. But I mean, I like Mr. Perfect. I like him quite a bit, actually. I enjoyed when he was on commentary before. I enjoyed his, you know, accepting Hunter Hearst Helmsley's challenge when you saw him last week, even though it was completely not related to the Godwins versus the Groom Twins, but whatever. But no, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing Mr. Perfect. I love the Perfect Plex also. Like, the Perfect Plex is one of my favorite moves. I love moves where you can, you know, you do a suplex and then it stays into a bridging pin. And this one, the leg is already hooked. It's one of my favorite moves, actually, the Fisherman's Hook suplex. So,
and what is your kind of, just out of curiosity, do you have any idea what happens?
I don't.
Good. Okay, good.
So I've been actively avoiding finding out on this particular case.
So then you get to see the Smoking Guns. Billy and Bart,
right? Okay. Is Bart Gunn the one that did Brawl for All?
Yes.
That's him? All right. Interesting.
So the Smoking Guns beat the New Rockers. I mean, there wasn't really much to talk about here. It was just a tag match. It was just a tag match, and that's it. Did you have any notes?
All of my notes are basically like the train of thought going from who are these mulleted men with X's that I figured were just like a job team, like the Grimm Twins or something, right? Because I didn't hear the New and Improved Rockers. And then they said Jannetty, and I was like, oh, wait, that is Marty Jannetty, isn't it? Huh. Interesting. Oh, New Rockers. Gotcha. Interesting. If these are the New and Improved ones, I really don't want to see the old ones, right? And then it was like about halfway through when I think like Billy Gunn and Leaf Cassidy were on the outside that I was like, wait a second. Who is that? Is that Al Snow? And then I was just so distracted for the rest of the match by trying to figure out if it was indeed Al Snow, because his hair is in his face a whole lot, but it was indeed Al Snow and they're calling him Leaf. And
I also asked Jim Cornette about Leaf Cassidy.
Oh, yeah?
And the name and how they came up with the name, because it's a terrible
Leaf
name.
Garrett and David Cassidy?
Yes, they came up with singer names and they just morphed them into Leaf Cassidy. Terrible, terrible name.
Terrible name. It's just so bizarre because Al Snow was one of the other wrestlers that I could have named like before I started watching wrestling, because I always remembered his name from my friend Mandy showing me tapes of wrestling back in like 99 or whatever. So I could name The Rock, I could name Triple H, and I could name Al Snow because I thought his name was so stupid.
What would Mandy be thinking now of Sondra being such a huge wrestling fan?
I'm sure she thinks it's bizarre if she knows that I'm into wrestling. I think she found, like, we're still Facebook friends or whatever, because we were friends in high school. And at one point she was like, you watch wrestling? That's so cool. And I was like, yeah, I do. That was the end of the conversation.
Bringing people together. So up next, we finally meet
the other thing
the
to
man.
Mention, though, is that Sunny was on the phone.
Sonny was on the phone because she obviously has the history with the Smoking Guns.
And they want her back, or Billy does or something. And she says, if they win those title belts back, then, you know, I might just consider taking them back because Billy is just too cute to resist. And then she gets all upset that Ahmed Johnson is going to be on her studio. Also, the email address or whatever that she says is www.fliviwire.com. WWF Livewire.
Yeah, no, that was true. That was the email address.
That's so weird.
Because someone had taken the Livewire one before them.
That's so funny.
And this year you couldn't get it back. So Livewire. So we get to meet Jesse James. We hear him singing the song. We then get taken to Jeff Jarrett singing the song again. Todd takes us back and tells us about the scandal. And shockingly, Jesse James says that he would give Double J, Jeff Jarrett, the chance to come back and carry his bags and become his roadie. How nice of him.
You want to drive my Lincoln Town car? You want to tote my bags to the airports? Yeah, come on, Jeff, let's do it. Road dog, says Jesse James.
How are you enjoying the continuation of this epic scandal that is gripping the fans of the World Wrestling Federation?
So remember when I was like, who could possibly care about this Jeff Jarrett scandal? Oh boy, do I care about this Jeff Jarrett scandal now. I'm enjoying it.
But you know that it's not leading to a match with Jeff Jarrett, right?
Like,
you
know, no. I don't care. The thing is, I still don't care about Jeff Jarrett. I don't care about his part in this at all. What's fascinating to me is last week, I believe I was asking questions like, how did that meeting go? What was the end game here between Jeff Jarrett and the roadie, right? What I like about this, actually, genuinely what I like about this, even though it is so shit, right? I like that they're actually answering some of those questions. And also, how awkward does Jesse James look when this interview starts? He's like, ha ha, yeah, we're here. Ha ha ha, nervous laughter. So, yeah, they called me. They sure did. They sure called me and they want to know what's going on. And You know, he actually explains that, you know, he took, or Jeff Jarrett took him further than he had gotten, but he took Jeff Jarrett further than he'll ever be, and that's the truth. And he talks about how Jeff Jarrett isn't the world's greatest entertainer. He's not even a good entertainer. So it's bizarre that they're still trying to, like, bury Jeff Jarrett, but I understand now the direction of it, because they're trying to create a backstory and a history for Jesse James, and that part of things I do appreciate about it. And they're giving him actual motivation, right? Like, when he was with Jeff Jarrett, he explains why he pulled Jeff Jarrett's foot, because, you know, he'll take some of the heat for it. He wasn't paying attention to the match, and Jeff Jarrett always signaled for him to call to, like, pull the opponent's foot or whatever so that they could double team, because Jeff couldn't do anything on his own. And so then, you know, the roadie would pull the ankle, and he ended up pulling Jeff's because he wasn't paying attention to the match. Like any good sidekick, he just wasn't paying attention or whatever. And then caused Shawn Michaels to win the Intercontinental Championship. And I just can't get over Jeff Jarrett's gear every time they show those clips, because, oh boy, what is he wearing?
So 90s country. It's unreal.
But 90s country, did people actually wear, like, blue strips of fabric leading up to around their neck?
I mean, I'm probably not the guy to ask about that particular brand of fashion. But, like,
I grew up in the 90s, and I listened to country, and I don't remember seeing that.
It's going to have to remain an enigma that we can't answer until Jeff Jarrett finally, I don't know, has a conversation with me or something.
Where he doesn't just talk about Jeff wrestling and mugs and
houses. Oh, God, I know. Hey, Jeff, do you want to do a tour, but you can't talk about Global Force?
I love that Jeff Jarrett has been unavailable to respond, or he's refused to comment on this scandal.
He was last seen in Atlanta, Georgia, walking into a Nitro taping. So Goldust is up next, and he's got a promo about the main event. And had you seen many, like, Goldust promos from this kind of time frame? Because this is when he's still referencing movies and having quotes from them and all that sort of stuff. And what did you think of Goldust overall?
Here. I've seen a fair bit of Goldust from this era. Goldust is one of those characters that seemed so bizarre that I looked him up. And I like the movie references. You know, Mother's Not Quite Herself Today, Psycho 1960, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I got all excited. And of course, he's facing Psycho Sid. Goldust at this point. I feel like Goldust is infinitely better now. And I feel like he looks infinitely better now in his 40s than he did then in his 20s.
But isn't his character so much better here, though?
His character, like, is so much better, but,
like, he's look at the effort. He's got the robe, he's got the wig, he's got Marlena, he's got the movie quotes, he's got so much going on about him. Now he's just fucking comedy fodder to that stupid tit.
This is true.
Do you know what you've just missed, actually, and you would have loved this, is earlier on in 1996, there was a feud with The Undertaker and Goldust, where they had, like, a 3-month thing, and, you know, like, sometimes Taker would have, like, a casket match?
Yeah.
And the casket was gold.
Really?
And had Goldust logo on it. It was pretty good. It was pretty fun.
See, my issue with Goldust and looking back at old Goldust stuff, because we're kind of beyond super homophobia Goldust at this point, aren't we? Or is that still a major part of it? Because I didn't get a lot of that from this.
We're in the later days now. That's kind of gone.
Because in the days of super homophobia Goldust, I never thought he was gay enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, when he's wrestling, he'll do something every once in a while, but then he's just wrestling a match. I don't think he was... Everyone talks about how committed he was to it, but I don't know.
What would you have wanted him to do to be more gay?
Well, I don't know. I can't think of any specifics right now. But it's more just, like, in between moves or in between acts of acting gay, he just acts like a regular wrestler.
That's an interesting. I've never heard that perspective before. That's interesting. We get clips of Livewire with Vince McMahon talking about JR being disgruntled. I mean, see if now, if like today, somebody was like, right, there's a one-hour show on a Saturday morning that'll have Vince McMahon, Michael Hayes, Sonny, Vince Russo, and Jim Cornette. I would be up at 9 a.m. every Saturday morning with popcorn at the ready to watch that. Like, oh, so good. Like, I mean, because Livewire would be a very short-lived thing, but I really liked it. And I think it's maybe because I associate that kind of time period with when I started, like, learning more about the behind-the-scenes stuff. And it kind of, this always reminds me of the time period where that stuff really intrigued me because I didn't know anything.
Well, I think that was part of the whole deal, wasn't it? That Livewire was supposed to be like, that was supposed to be real, and you're finding out the real behind the scenes. And that's kind of what they seem to be angling with the whole JR Vince McMahon angle, because they keep going, oh yeah, and then we're going to actually talk about this, and we're going to talk about like these negotiations and the investigation or whatever they're doing. And it sounds fascinating. I actually do want to check out Livewire at some point.
Yeah, I'll get you the discs. Does anyone, Sandra, wear polyester better than Jim Cornette?
No. Absolutely not. What an icon.
So he comes out with Vader, cuts what I thought was a great promo on Shawn Michaels and the fact that Vader's beat him like four times, and you know, when he finally gets to Buried Alive, he's going to beat Sid. And then like he randomly breaks the fourth wall by saying, you know, JR, you and I haven't got on that well, but thanks for bringing Vader into the WWF.
Yeah.
Like, really weird, but yeah.
And the other commentators asked JR about that. They say, like, what does he mean? Thanks for bringing Vader in. And JR said something like, oh, he's kind of talking out of turn there a little bit. Shouldn't have really said that live.
So, because the thing is, imagine you're like 11 years old or whatever, and this stuff's happening. Like, you don't have a clue what's going on. You know, like maybe this is the example of like if you're like 9, CM Punk cuts the pipe bomb, you're like, what?
Or if you had just started watching wrestling and CM Punk cuts the pipe bomb, and say you don't know who Paul Heyman is, and say you don't know any of that stuff. It was 2011, Kenny.
You had the internet, Sandra. You could have Googled it.
I know, but I didn't read wrestling news at that point. I did Google it. I did find out, and Mr. Sandra explained it to me. But I'm just saying, when he cut that pipe bomb, I was like that uninformed wrestling child.
I have two words for you, Sandra. And I'm not even going to say anything after that. I'm just going to give you these two words, and I'm putting over to you. The Sultan.
Oh boy, the Sultan. And oh boy, everything about this match, right? Everything about this match was so great.
So the idea is that the Sultan is managed by two former bitter rivals.
And what? I have so many questions. Okay. So, like, first of all, let's just get fashion out of the way, right? Like, the Sultan looks amazing.
I remember in 1996, my mom had said to me, it was 97 by this point, I think, but, like, my mom had said to me, I'll get you one or two things for Christmas as, like, your big present. I was like, okay. And she said, I'll either get you tickets to go and see One Night Only, which in hindsight would have been amazing, or I'll get you a box of wrestling figures. And there was this guy who like lived in England. His name was Mr. Slater, and he had a shop that had loads of wrestling figures. And I remember that they'd brought out these new like manager packs, where it was like the wrestler and the manager. So it was like Undertaker, Paul Bearer, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that swung me to not going to One Night Only and getting the box of figures is that they had released a 2-pack of the Sultan and Bob Backlund. I was having that Sultan figure, and it was tremendous. No, I sadly don't, but I'm all about some Sultan. I'm like his fucking face mask.
Yeah, the mask, the hat with the like sort of crochet chainmail like neck adornment thing. It reminded me a little bit of Tensai at first, because he used to come out in the hat for like a week, you know.
Yes. Before he lost his lordship.
Well, first he lost his helmet, and then he lost his lordship, and then he lost his manservant, and then he lost his tattoos. Like, and now he coaches at NXT, so it's great. But no, like the mask and everything. Now I know who the Sultan is, and I almost wish I didn't, so that you could tell me, and then I could be surprised about it. But unfortunately, I do know it's Rikishi. But yeah, and he's like all in these like red satin like bloomer pants things, and I love everything about the Sultan. Everything. Now my questions are many. Why with Bob Backlund and the Sultan? Now I feel commentary tried to ask Bob Backlund about this, and Bob Backlund didn't have much coherent to say about it.
Well, I think the idea behind them being paired up was that Bob Backlund was the former WWF champion for like 4 years or however long it was. And then the Iron Sheik was the man to defeat him. So how good would somebody be if those two together were coaching him?
So that's it?
The answer is not the Sultan.
Is not the Sultan, no. No, not
And then
at all.
The fact that he is in a match with Aldo Montoya, the Portuguese man of war.
I never realized Aldo Montoya was so colorful.
And how much it looks like he has a big jock strap in his face.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's all I knew about Aldo Montoya, honestly. Because I remember you interviewing him, right? And I remember you talking with him about this, you know, Aldo Montoya deal and how he got the job and everything. So I have a little bit of background on Aldo Montoya. I didn't expect the jock strap to be bright yellow.
Well, when he first came in, he had a bit of an afro on him.
Oh, did he?
But here, it's just like shaven haven.
Mm-hmm.
And he just... He's a complete jobber at this point, but...
He looks like a knockoff, like, Poundland superhero, kind of, though.
He does. He looks like if it's, like, 6 p.m. and you all of a sudden remember your friends having a superhero party.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely what you would wear.
Yeah, you just like, oh, I've got that yellow stuff. I'll just, like, make that into a mask. And then you run out of material. But isn't the Sultan just the worst thing ever?
Oh,
but
he's
in the best possible way.
It's just nothing about the Sultan makes sense. Like, what is he the Sultan of? Like, to be a Sultan, don't you have to have like a land?
And also, if for anyone who's, you know, we always encourage when you listen to this show that you watch along with us. That's the best way.
And if you don't watch anything else on this show, watch this match. Seriously. Like,
but here's the thing. I challenge anybody listening to this to find me someone who wears a headset better than Bob Backlund during this match.
It keeps falling off. But part of the issue is I love everything about Bob Backlund here. He is so mental. He is so bonkers. So he comes out and the Sultan's entrance is going to happen, right? And there's this big puff of smoke and... Like, you don't see the Sultan or the Iron Sheik at first. What you see is Bob Backlund running out through the R and the A, like the big rock, which I love. And he's just, like, manic, like, ah, I'm Bob Backlund and I'm here. I didn't even understand if he was supposed to be there or not at first. Like, it just seemed like he was just there, like he was invading, because he's done that. So, like, so Bob Backlund, a wild Bob Backlund appears, right? He's not wearing the sunglasses at this point. He's unsunglasses. Like, his face does not have glasses on them. He sits down at commentary, tries to put on a headset. It doesn't go very well, like, the entire time. But then they make reference to his eyewear or something. He goes, I can't hear without my glasses on. Was that a thing?
No. No. It was not a thing.
I was wondering if that was like a Bob Backlund bit, or is this was just like a one-off, like, nope, I have to wear sunglasses now.
Backlund be mental. And then like, I felt like the Iron Sheik and Bob Backlund had like both bumped into each other on a cruise and like had a drink and they were like, you know, if we fucking put our brains together, we had a guy, he'd be the fucking world champion. And then as this is happening, you've got this guy like nearby just like sweeping up the trash, this kind of overweight guy, and they're like, he could be a Sultan. Like, that's how this was all born. Not that I'm saying Rikishi looks like a trash man, but just for the purposes of where they were on the cruise, I feel like that's what thing. So yeah, the Sultan, he's around for a while. Enjoy him.
Oh, he's so good. And also, like, Bob Backlund's whole commentary deal here is just hilarious to me because, like, he comes out and then he doesn't have the sunglasses on, but then he does later. And then he's talking like, don't talk to me. Don't, like, something while I'm, you know, talking to the plebeians. And he keeps saying plebeians. And then he says he can't hear without his glasses on. So then he puts on these sunglasses that are just huge. Like, they look like the sunglasses that, like, very old people wear that completely, like, cover their old person huge glasses. Yeah, like, I mean, it's when, like, you have really large, like, just eyeglasses and you need to have, like, even larger sunglasses to cover them. It's very bizarre. It's just, like... And then you find out that he can flip the sunglasses up because he says, like, you know, or they ask why Bob Backlund is wearing these sunglasses, right? And
which is a valid question.
It is a valid question because why would you be wearing them? And King's like, Mr. Backlund's future is so bright, he's got to wear sunglasses at night. All right, there's a quip, Jerry Lawler. But then he goes, no, that's not why I got him on. So he takes issue with this whole, like, all right, well, let's gloss over the fact that Bob Backlund is being mental and wearing these sunglasses or whatever. He's like, nope, that's not why I got him on. The WWF insisted that I wear these because the people, the plebeians, don't like me scrutinizing them, so they make me cover up my eyes. They don't want me to tell them not to take drugs anymore or swear or whatever. But then he points out that, you know, all he has to do is flip up the sunglasses and then I can look you directly in the face and tell you that you're a weak individual and the Sultan's gonna be the new champion.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, Bob Backlund. I love everything about you. I don't understand why you think that the Sultan being champion is gonna put morality back into fair society. There's a disconnect. There's a disconnect.
There is. I cannot argue with you in any way, shape, or form. But the good thing is, you know, we've talked about how you're not going to get as much stalker as you want. Now you've got the Sultan.
Now I've got the Sultan. I mean, I wasn't quite stalker levels of excited about the Sultan, but I was still pretty excited about the Sultan. So I'm glad that we have the Sultan if we can't have the stalker.
Then we have Mankind and Paul Bearer at the other side of the cemetery, and Mankind's in a grave going mental, and Paul Bearer's just like trying to like console him. Paul Bearer's so good here.
Paul Bearer's like, so good. Well, and I feel really bad for Mankind because the reason Mankind is so upset is that he goes, Uncle Paul, the grave's not big enough. Like, it's not big enough for the Undertaker. It's only big enough for me. And he's like, I don't want maggots eating at my flesh, because the Undertaker had said that, you know, when maggots are eating your infested carcass or something. And Mankind doesn't want the maggots eating at his flesh. So I don't know, can Mankind hear these Undertaker promos? Like, are they really just right, like, a couple graves away from each other hearing what's going on? Like,
First of all, I love that whenever you reference an Undertaker promo, you make sure to reference it in a tone of slight disdain every time. Every time. But it's not clear, is the answer to your question, whether Mankind is hearing the promos from Undertaker or not. But they sure do make for good companion pieces to each other.
I like to imagine that Mankind and Paul Bearer were like scrunched down behind a grave, because obviously if they're at the grave that the Undertaker's building, they were right near each other. So I like to imagine that they like, I mean, it had to be a pretty fucking big gravestone for Paul Bearer and Mankind to hide behind it. But I like to imagine that they were hiding behind a gravestone, like watching the Undertaker during the first vignette of the show.
I do like that idea. But it's main event time, Sondra. We had been waiting for this for one whole week. Psycho Sid, not with a P, versus Goldust. 1-on-1, 4 minutes of action. What did you think?
So shit. It's so shit. Like, Psycho Sid's knockoff Psycho music is pretty funny. And
his music is fucking great. I will not have anything. That is such good music.
The crowd loves him, too.
Because he's great. Like, the thing about Sid is legitimately a great great character. Like, people always knock him, and I never understand why, because I think he's one of the best things on the show in terms of, like, believing the character, like, believing what he is. Like, you do believe he's a little bit mental. And
a little bit mental?
And I like the way they shoot the camera when he's there. I love his power bomb, because it's just like he kind of places the guy on the ground. There's like no hardness in it whatsoever.
Yeah. His power bomb that he stole from Vader, as Jim Cornette would point out.
This is very true. But no, I've always loved Sid, so be prepared for me trying to talk about my love of Sid every week.
He's just ball of tanning booth and supplements.
Ah, the 90s.
Yeah. Like, he's just such an odd color.
He is. He's got, like, probably one of the greatest physiques a wrestler could ever have. Like, I think if you were like, I'm going to build a wrestler in the 90s, Sid would be what you would build.
Yeah.
Like, that's what, like, exactly what they would want. So Sid beats Goldust quite easily, and then post-match, Vader comes out. He attacks Sid with a splash in the second rope. But Sid gets right back up, and Vader turns around, and Jerry Lawler makes the best high-pitched squealing noise that I've ever heard. As Sid is preparing to destroy Vader, he gets a chokeslam in. Jim Cornette manages to get Vader to safety, and they sort of hightail it away as Sid stands tall. What did you think of this post-match angle and trying to set up more bad blood for Buried Alive with Sid and Vader?
Honestly, Vader comes out to, like, he sloppily sort of, like, punches at Sid or whatever, but he does the splash. That might be the best splash we've seen so far.
It might be.
Like, it was pretty good. I have an issue with Goldust gear.
Okay.
It's all kinds of wrong. Like, it bunches in exactly the wrong places. Like, I don't know if they made it loose because they were like, he's not as fit as someone who should wear complete skin-tight spandex, but they just should have gone with the skin-tight spandex, because then it wouldn't bunch around.
I've saw more of Dustin Runnels' testicles than I ever want to see in my life.
Like, it just, it's not, it goes straight up his ass, too.
It does.
It's not a good look. Like, who in the world decided that that was a good idea?
I can't really answer that. It's not a great idea. But see, he used to wear another kind of, just whenever you get a chance, go and find a match he did like late 95, early 96. And he had, like, you could tell he had different material for his gear.
Better or worse?
Equivalently bad, but in different ways.
Oh.
And I can't remember why he changed it. I can't remember why he changed it. But, I mean, I thought the show was pretty good in terms of building up, you know, the programs for Buried Alive, Undertaker, Mankind, and Sid and Vader. It was decent. What I find interesting is that Shawn Michaels doesn't have a match at Buried Alive. The WWF champion. No match.
Doesn't, does he? Yeah, Shawn Michaels was on the phone for a minute, and he sounded like he was asleep or on drugs.
Welcome to 1996, Shawn Michaels.
He didn't really say much of anything. It was like, I'm Shawn Michaels, I am the champion, or something. But yeah, it is bizarre that he doesn't have a match. Does he get a match at all?
Nope.
Is he even there?
Yeah, he is there to witness the match between Sid and Vader to see who's going to win, so he finds out who he's going to face.
That is kind of bizarre. Although, I mean, I like the fact that they're doing a number one contenders match on a pay-per-view. That makes it seem big.
Well, because also the thing about In Your House is at this point, In Your Houses are 2-hour pay-per-views, not three.
Oh, that's lovely.
Because the idea was that they charge people $20 instead of $40 to get a 2-hour pay-per-view. So,
yeah, that sounds like a lovely thing.
So overall, I'm guessing the October 7th show has restored your faith in 1996 Raw.
It has restored my faith in 1996 Raw. I like it. I like it a whole lot. I'm a big fan of 1996 Raw right now, especially because it's so short, but so much happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like every time I'm introduced to these bizarre new characters, I get pretty excited, clearly.
So next week / 2 days from now, we're back again with this week's show, which will be October the 14th, 1996, where the feud that's gone on for months and months and months will be settled once and for all on Monday Night Raw when Stone Cold Steve Austin faces off against Savio Vega. Savio Vega. Any thoughts on him?
Was that next week, Sean or Steve Austin versus Savio Vega?
Yeah, they did the promo for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't really have any thoughts on Savio Vega other than that he always carries a strap with him. And I'm wondering if he will have it with him this time.
I'm going to bet he will.
Yep.
Because it's Savio Vega. He likes to have a strap with him, you know?
He likes to have a strap.
We all have our proclivities.
Yeah, what can you do?
Sandra, where can the people of the Retro Raw Rundown find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
So thank you for listening. Dave and I will be back with the Raw Rundown. Sandra and I will be back at some point this week with a No Mercy / SmackDown summary. And we'll have the other Retro Raw Rundown. So the podcasts are back. Thank you for listening, and please let us know what you think on social media or leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's just nice.
And we appreciate it. Bye.
We do. We appreciate you. Bye.